our presentation today is Earth Day, Walking the Talk by Gary Gates. Longtime Prairie member Gary Gates was the head of the State Department of Employee Trust Funds, administering the state's Wisconsin retirement system and other employee benefit plans. The Wisconsin State Journal featured him in its Know Your Madisonian column in December of 2000. But his career as a top state bureaucrat was not what prompted that recognition. It was his having recycled, listen to this, his 1 millionth aluminum can. I'm not making this up. After retiring, he indulged another burning passion by lighting fires for prairie burns all over the state of Wisconsin. In 2021, the Wisconsin State Journal again featured him, but it was not about his pyromaniac tendencies. It was because he had recycled his 2 millionth aluminum can. Today, he will talk about how his lifestyle reflects the values of Earth Day, and please welcome Gary Gates.
Some of you may scratch your head at some point in my presentation today, and think, if you haven't already done so, haven't I heard this before? If so, you've passed the test. Your memory still works. Last month, Renee mentioned to me that she needed a speaker for today. I suggested I give my 2022 Earth Day speech again, since Earth Day is almost here. She was delighted with this idea. I realize that some of you may remember what I said then, but my speech is about recycling. And what could be more appropriate than a recycled speech? Also, there have been a lot of new members since then. Some people probably were so unfortunate as to have missed my presentation. And most of you probably can't remember what I said anyway. I also thought my speech was so wonderful that you would want to hear it again, even if you could remember it. Don't tell me if I'm wrong. So, going back to where I was, normally people are selected to make a presentation up here because they have a special area of knowledge to share. I had never had any illusions that I was selected for this reason. I was asked to talk because I am weird. What else can you say about someone whose idea of fun is to dig through garbage? Recycling over 2 million aluminum cans? Doesn't he have anything better to do? How does he know how many he has recycled? 2,297,634. 2,297,639. No, even I'm not quite that weird. 27 and a half ordinary sized aluminum cans weighs 1 pound. When I take the cans to the recycling center, they weigh them. I just multiply the weight, 83,551 pounds, by 27 and a half equals 297,640 cans recycled, taken in so far. My weirdness manifested itself even when I was a kid. I'd go to the beach, but I rarely went in the water. I'd walk around and pick up trash and put it in the trash barrels. I wasn't a real popular kid, I must say, but my real claim to weirdness came in 1988, however, when I started keeping track of how many aluminum cans I was recycling. I should note that if you plan on spending your life digging through garbage, it helps to have a supportive spouse. I didn't really start getting into cans until I married Pam. We both biked to work, and on the way downtown and home, we would pick up aluminum cans. While I talk about the number of cans I recycle, Pam has continued picking up cans as well, as she walks and bikes around town, and would, and her cans get added into my totals. So I'm being a little dishonest here, I guess. She just doesn't dig through trash cans and dumpsters to find them. In fact, sometimes when we're out walking, she has gone so far as to suggest that I don't need to point out the best trash cans and dumpsters. Pam, however, has always been very understanding about my coming home with dirty, smelly clothing for her to launder. In fact, when I started my obsessions, I frequently found good clothing in dumpsters and would bring loads of it home for her to wash. Then we would donate it to St. Vincent's or Goodwill. After a few years, however, Pam said she was tired of doing laundry for the entire city of Madison. I had to get more selective and bring home only clothing we or friends could use. By the way, Pam has some quirks of her own. When we bought our house, a washing machine and dryer came with it. She promptly said she had never used a dryer. She wanted to hang the laundry out on a clothesline. So we gave the dryer away, and I had to put up clotheslines. She uses them even in winter. Although she will hang stuff inside the house on the coldest days, it is not unusual to have to bring clothes back inside to thaw out. Neither of us like water softeners because they use salt. To deal with the problem of Madison's hard water, we set up a rain barrel and haul rainwater downstairs in pails and jugs. When Pam does laundry, she pours rainwater into the machine and runs back down in the basement for the rinse cycles to pour more rainwater in. It makes a fairly active laundry. One of Pam's favorite things to volunteer for is doing laundry at the Beacon, the homeless day shelter. She'd come home and brag about how she'd done 30 or 40 loads of laundry that day. I've never asked her how she overcame her aversion to using clothes dryers and artificially softened water. I would never be so undiplomatic as to say Pam is weird, but you can see how we fit together. As co-chair of Pam's Social Action Committee, Pam has been a strong advocate for making the homeless a focus of our social action activities. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that her husband is so often mistaken as a homeless man. Let's see here. What do I want to say next? I don't know. I have often been offered money when I'm out there digging through the garbage cans or the dumpsters. And I try to turn it down usually, but sometimes people are so insistent, to make them feel good, I have to accept it. So I just pass it on. I have too many pieces of paper here. At any rate, just last week I was offered $5 and I was going through the dumpster at Brittingham, and I said, no, I don't need it. I don't do this for money. I do it just to recycle. He said, oh, environmental, huh? Okay. So he forgave me for not taking his money. Where the heck did I put that? Anyway, at age 80, no, I find. I'll make it up as I go along. Pam now, of course, spends time at the river also, but I haven't ever figured that into my speech yet. But homelessness is still her main concern. And I have always been rather impressed with how she insistent she is on trying to help those who need help. What's what I need to do? Nope. I
have gone out and at night. There was times when I would hunt all night long when I was younger. I don't do that anymore. In fact, I'd hunt over 24 hours at a straight sometimes. Now I can't manage that. I look back and wonder how I did then. I was definitely sleep deprived. But every year I said to myself, in fact, when we started, I said, oh, we started at 30 a day. I can make it at 50. Then I can make it 100. Then I can make it 200. So I always trying to beat myself. You know how tiring it is to always try to beat yourself? any rate, I got a total for the year. I can beat that this year. I can beat last year's this year. I can beat last year this year. Finally, in 1998, I think it was, I recycled 250,000 cans. And I killed myself doing it. And I said, I'm never going to beat this record again, so I don't have to, I'm not going to try to beat it. And so the steam went out of me, and but also at that point, I started into controlled burning, prairie burns, woods burns. So my can count went down to only 30 to 40,000 a year at that point. But I was out doing burns. I do 4, 7, 6, 7, 8 burns a week with prairie enthusiasts, nature conservancy, Ice Age Trail, fish and wildlife, DNR. Anybody that wanted to do a burn, I'd do it. I love burning. Burns were sort of in my DNA, I guess. I did my first controlled burn, quote unquote, when I was 12 years old. my dad always burned off the field at in the truck farm we had. And one year I was home by myself and I thought, I can do that. So I went out and lit the fire. I was working very hard to keep it on our land when my dad came home. He helped put it out, and I thought, oh, I'm in big trouble. He was not a kind and forgiving man. He had a big rawhide strap that he'd use on us to, if we didn't behave ourselves. And I thought, I really am going to get it this time. He never said a word about it. I often wondered if it was because I never told him I lit it. But there's also another possibility. As I said, when I started doing controlled burns, I went out and do woods burns, prairie burns, whatever. But I inherited from my dad a tool, which I didn't know what it was. It looked sort of like a pickaxe, but it wasn't. And I like that. And then one year when I was going out one day, when I was going out to do a burn with Nature Conservancy in the woods, I thought, hey, that might be handy to have along for the woods burn. So I brought it. And while we were out there, one of the other people called me on the walkie-talkie and said, hey, Gary, where's the Pulaski? I said, the what? He said, the Pulaski, you brought it. And that was my introduction to Pulaskis, a tool which is designed specifically for woods burns. It has an axe on one end and a big hoe on the other. So you could knock apart burning logs or dig a trench to make a non-combustible line. And it was invented by a man named Pulaski, who I got to know better just in the last few weeks when I was reading The Big Burn. In 1910, Ed Pulaski was one of the heroes of The Big Burn. It burned four different states and hit some partial ones. Montana, Washington, Oregon. The forest up just totally burned, wildfire. Nobody could control it. Ed Pulaski, as I said, was one of the heroes of that burn. And Afterwards, he invented the Pulaski to help fight him. Now, as I getting back to Cairns, I would note that I sometimes went out at night, and there were times when that was a little risky. I remember being stopped by cops quite often. There was one particular dumpster at an apartment that I really loved because it was, had so many cans in it. And I'd always pick up around, and the maintenance man loved me because I made it look so much nicer. But then they got a new maintenance man, and he didn't like me. He said, you look trashy. Get out of here. I said, I hate to give up this dumpster. It's such a nice one. And so I started getting up at 4 and getting there at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I beat him. Only I wasn't early enough. And one day, as I was pulling away from that dumpster, 4 police cars surrounded me. And one guy looked at me and said, oh, I know you. You're always picking up cans. Well, just don't come here again, please. So I went on my way. I wondered afterwards, is this part of my white privilege, that I can go out and pick up cans at night and be told to just go away? What if I'd been black? I don't know. But that was one of the thoughts I had at that time. Anyway, getting back to fire again. You may wonder why nature organizations are so fascinated by fire. They want to burn prairies, want to burn woods. There are a lot of reasons. The big burn established one of them. It hadn't been burned, it was dry, and the fire roared and killed people, and they couldn't put it out. It finally burned itself out. That was the only way it stopped. But prairies are fire dependent. You can't have a prairie without fire, because the overlay of dead vegetation would smother the plants. Trees and brush would grow in and smother out the shade out the prairie. Also, fire will happen whether you want it or not. Frequent small burns do a lot less damage than big burns after you build up lots of fuel. And square foot for square foot, a well-established prairie will sequester more carbon than any other kind of plant vegetation because deep roots go down in the ground and take the carbon with it. Unfortunately, we have paved over, plowed under, and otherwise destroyed almost all of the prairie that was in this country when we arrived. I participated in hundreds of controlled burns, but and the question would come up, aren't we putting carbon back in the atmosphere? Well, to a certain degree we are, but the important point was we're putting a lot of it into the ground. I also participated in, led over 100 brush clearing work parties, because you have to get the brush out of the prairie if the prairie is going to survive. At age 80, I was forced to recognize I no longer had the stamina to do controlled burns. I was out there on my last big burn, lighting. And then it was time to do the mop up. And I couldn't move. And I figured if you can't mop up, you can't light it. So I quit doing controlled burns of any size at that point. Not last year, but 2019 was the first year after I quit doing the controlled burns that I had recycled over 100,000 cans. 22 and 23, however, went downhill. My can count was only 95,000 in 22 and 85,000 in 23. I don't have any excuses for 22. I do have excuses for 23. First off, I was caught by the prairie COVID epidemic. And I wasn't sure I was going to survive. I couldn't breathe. So, but as soon as I was able to get back on my feet again, I went out hunting. I was, still wasn't in very good shape, but I had to get back out to get those cans before they went to the dump. And I had been out 4 or 5 times, still not feeling all that great, when one day I put the cans on the back of my bike, and one day the back of my bike fell off with about 500-600 cans on it. And I was a couple miles from home, and I thought, what do I do now? Well, I always carry a lot of rope with me, and I tied it back together and rode it home. But I thought, uh-oh, I guess I could fix this up to make it functional again, but I probably better get a new bike. So I went out and bought a new bike and had to re-outfit that before I got out there. So it took quite a time, bit of time away from my hunting. That plus the COVID plus the new bike, I really wasn't doing too well. Then in December, I got strep throat, and it really almost as bad as when it was COVID. And I barely got over that, or hadn't quite got over that, when I got a sinus infection. And I barely got over that when I got flu. And I have all sorts of excuses why I didn't do all that well in 23. even after COVID, I probably didn't wait the time you're supposed to let be sure it wasn't. But I figured there wasn't going to be very many people out there when I was going through garbage cans and dumpsters that I would infect. I mentioned that Pam actually gets some of the credit for what I do, but or should get some of the credit. I don't give it to her, but other people have started noting it, and they've been throwing bags of cans in my yard or giving them to me. I count them too, even though I shouldn't. Sometimes when I'm biking down the street, people yell at me, "Hey, I got some cans for you." When I receive these gifts, I'm never sure where they would have been recycled anyway, and if I should count them as my cans. The same is true of the cans Pam brings in, but I count them anyway. Now, I had originally, when I was going to give this speech, thought we might burn our prairie today. It doesn't look like we will. But I should mention that last time I burned it, but Reverend Matt, before he left, suggested to me that I should bring somebody else in to handle the burns in case someday I wasn't able to do it. I took that to heart. The last burn, Karen Deaton was so delighted, just giddy about burns, that I said, hey, I talked to Randy as housing and property chair. I said, talk to Karen, hey, would you like to lead the burns from now on? And she was happy to. But she wasn't going to be here today anyway, so even if it hadn't rained, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But she will lead the burn sometime in the next few weeks, and I will just be there as an advisor. I don't know how good an advisor I am. I tend to take over, but I know that she will be enthused about it at least, and she will learn how to do it so that when I'm gone, it can be carried on. Now, I would like to stop at this point and answer any questions you have about burning or about cans. I've not a one who likes to talk all the time. I'd like to hear what you have to say. Any questions? I do not have precise statistics. Sorry. I just know that the basic principle is that prairie plants' roots can go down 25, 30 feet. They take carbon with them. They sequester it. The carbon you put back in the air when you burn it is minor compared to what they're putting down in their roots. And same is true with woods. If you don't, the woods will burn sooner or later. If you do it with small burns, you're going to put some carbon back in the air. If you wait till it catches and you're not out there, it'll be a much bigger burn and burn a lot of other stuff, killing trees at the same time. A controlled burn usually does not kill the trees. It might burn up some of the dead wood, but it won't. It doesn't get so intense as to kill the trees themselves. Well, yes, it is true, but I took the checks, signed them over to Prairie, and put them into the Sunday offering. I'm not doing that this year. I decided I'd just give cash, because by signing the checks and putting them in the Sunday offering, I was creating quite a accounting effort for the people who would do that. So I decided it'd be nicer and just give cash instead of the checks. You know.
Well,
but it still has the same effect. Prairies can actually be burned even in the winter if the snow isn't on them. There was one burn we did with Nature Conservancy out at Spring Green. It was a big hill, and the bluff would always dry out. So we'd burn it in the winter because you didn't have to worry about it getting away. There's snow all around. What was the rest of your question? How often? Generally speaking, if you have a well-established prairie, it should be burned every 4 or 5 years to keep other plants from infringing upon it. When you're just starting a prairie, you want to maybe burn it every year until it gets really started. There is no ideal time during the year. We usually do it during the spring, but that's convenient for us, not for the prairie. Fall is the other time that we usually burn, but again, that's convenient. The way we do controlled burns, you have to get a lot of equipment out there to make sure you can control it. That's a lot of work getting that equipment out there. Then you put it away, then you get it out, then you can put it away. So we don't do burns year-round because it's just too much work for us. But actually, it could burn during the summer. During the summer, less likely to burn as intensely because it's more green, but it can be burned anytime. I don't define a prairie, other people do. One of my great weaknesses is in this process is people do burn prairies. Really, I know prairies better than I do. I just burn them. but if you be a real good burner, you say, those are the plants that are here, I know how they'll burn. I don't care, they'll burn. prairie plants basically were here before we came. They developed a tremendous root system and they handled drought very well because there's so much of the plant below the ground rather than above the ground. That is probably a pretty definite definition of what is a prairie plant. They have more root system than they have plants above the ground. Our prairie, of course, is we got a prairie out here because we took plants that were prairie plants and planted them. Does that make it a prairie? It's a question of definition. The original prairies, of course, covered millions of acres. We don't have that anymore. You could almost say that we don't have prairies anymore because there's nothing extensive enough to be a true prairie. But there are a lot of organizations trying to keep prairies alive, even though they don't have millions of acres to work with anymore. Thank you. I appreciate being able to do this, and I hope that it was worthwhile.
Thank you so very much.